Hi, and welcome to a new season of 45 Days. I'm your host, Julia Ritchie.
And I'm Nicole Nixon.
Hard to believe, but yes, we are just a little over 2 weeks away from the start of another legislative session.
And this season, we are trying things a little differently. Julia and I will be stationed up on the Hill as KUER's Capitol Bureau team the entire 45 days. And each week, we'll be bringing you the highlights,
the lowlights,
and the behind the scenes with new segments, including one we are calling Better Know a Lawmaker.
We're also going to be taking your questions and posing them to legislators, trying to explain how potential bills could affect you. So before we can do any of that, though, we need to take a quick break.
45 Days, More to Say, Radio West, KUER is bringing you more podcasting than ever this year. Search for KUER wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. If you like what you hear, tell a friend and thanks.
I guess a good place to start, Nicole, is what's on Republican leaders' agenda this year. We already had Governor Gary Herbert release his budget last month, and no surprise there, he's still pushing education.
He's been doing that for a few years. He's also hinted at the prospect of tax reform, which is something that we've heard a lot about at the federal level, but not so much in recent years in Utah. I know they tried it last year, but it didn't get anywhere, right?
No, not at all. They proposed a food tax, and it immediately died. But the last time Utah really tried to tackle tax reform was during Governor John Huntsman Jr.'s tenure. They lowered the income tax. So now House and Senate leaders say everything is on the table. And you'll hear a little bit later in the episode from one of those lawmakers who says that. This could include closing some of Utah's like hundreds of exemptions.
Also, Governor Herbert has said he wants to look at user fees.
That is going to be the buzzword this session. It's like a tax on specific things that you use.
Like Netflix.
And roads.
Can we seriously talk about Netflix?
I know, that's crazy.
But it's one of the proposals we've already seen, which is a fee on streaming services. Essentially, the argument is that since we're shifting from a goods-based economy of Utah manufacturing things to a service-based one, the state needs to adjust and make up for lots of lost sales tax revenue by taxing services.
And Governor Herbert has really hit home on that, and I think we're going to hear that during his State of the State address in just a couple weeks. And meanwhile, Utah's population is exploding like crazy. It's one of the fastest growing states in the country, right?
Yes, and you'd think that more people means more tax revenue. But since most of it is income tax, a lot of that is already earmarked for education. And that doesn't cover the cost of a lot of other government services like Medicaid or the cost of building new roads to handle all of these new people.
But that's just one of many bills that will be coming up. So some other ones I've heard about in recent weeks, texting and driving will come back up again.
That's in response to the 0.05 DUI, right? That passed last year.
We will see a lot of new beer bills too because of the 3.2.
We don't know. They might actually push that until 2019, but we'll see.
And we're also seeing things, healthcare for children. Mm-hmm. I've seen a few hemp bills in response to more medical marijuana research. But a lot of these are kind of maybe in response to some of the five citizen-led ballot initiatives that we might see on the ballot this year. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting to see if lawmakers are going to try to address some of those things like redistricting, direct primaries with Count My Vote, education spending. Again, there's a ballot initiative to raise, I think, property taxes to give even more money to education. But some of those things are not popular with the Republican lawmakers who dominate the legislature. So it could be possible that we see them trying to preempt a few of those.
It will be interesting to see what they do and how far they go. Something that we've reported on that nobody seems to want to talk about at the legislature is sexual harassment. Last month, we did a story about this male-dominated culture at the legislature and how it's still very pervasive on the Hill and how women who work there have to navigate what they call the gray area.
We should mention that a lot of the people we spoke to for that story didn't want to talk on the record about it. Do you think it's fair to say we might see some more hashtag Me Too moments during the session?
Probably, and maybe not as much publicly, but I think it is worth noting. Remember a couple months ago, there was discussion about requiring sexual harassment training for lobbyists, and that's definitely coming back. I've seen a couple bills that would require that.
And state legislatures across the country are grappling with this
right,
issue.
Right, this is not a Utah-specific problem. In fact, it seems like it's a lot worse in some of these other states.
It's true, and it probably because they have more women in their legislatures than we do. So that's another just whole different parity issue.
But in 45 days, anything can happen.
Okay, so we've got tax reform, medical marijuana, education spending, beer bills. We'll probably see another big push for criminal justice reform in the shape of more funding for the crime and drug crackdown. That's kind of euphemistically known as Operation Rio Grande. Transportation will probably be another hot button issue because lawmakers are trying to debate whether they should open up road money to different types of transportation, like buses and trains and things like that. Of course, because of the inversion being front on everyone's minds, we might see some more air quality bills this session.
Might want to add that it's an election year, and this is when you're likely to see some of these really crazy things come out.
And we should point out that there have been more bills filed in advance of this session than any previous year.
More than 1,000 bills already.
Also, we call the show 45 days, but in actuality, they have 30 days, 30 working days to get through some of these bills. They have to go through a committee, and then they have to go through a first reading, second reading, third reading, and then let alone a floor vote. Mm-hmm.
And then they do it all over again on the other side.
Exactly. And then they have to convince Governor Herbert that it's a good idea.
Not all of these bills will pass. There will be some duds. And there will be some oddballs. And we're going to tell you about two of our favorite oddball bills in this segment called I'm Just a Bill. The bill that I have my eye on is a bill by Republican Senator Kurt Bramble, and it would change the state fossil. Did you even know that we had a state fossil?
I did not know we had a state fossil. Oh. I mean, some people kind of joke that it might be Senator Orrin Hatch, but since he's retiring, we can't make those jokes anymore.
Anyways, I'm kind of a dinosaur nerd, so I knew that the state fossil was the Allosaurus. Senator Bramble says this year he was at a friend's house and he got talking about dinosaurs with their 10-year-old son.
Kenyon asked me if I knew what the state fossil was. It was kind of like Stump the Dummy, and I had no idea we had a state fossil, let alone what it was. So he proceeded to tell me all about the Allosaurus, how it was discovered in Colorado, and just gave me the whole history. And then he said, and Senator Kurt, it's time to have the Utah Raptor be the state fossil.
So this kid, Kenyon, was seriously a dinosaur expert. So he made his argument for the Utah Raptor that it's a dinosaur that was actually discovered in Utah, whereas the Allosaurus wasn't, and that so far the fossils of Utah Raptor have only been found in Utah.
It's literally called the Utah Raptor.
Yes. And Allosaurus fossils have been found all over the world. So he convinced Senator Bramble to open this bill file. And actually, there's been a little bit of pushback from paleontologists about this already. Even the state paleontologist, his name's Jim Kirkland, he was quoted as saying, and he actually had a big role in discovering and naming the Utah Raptor, but he wants the state to keep Allosaurus as the state fossil and maybe consider making the state dinosaur, which is something we don't have, the Utah Raptor.
That sounds like a good old-fashioned bipartisan compromise.
It does, doesn't it? And that's something that Senator Bramble said he'd be open to doing, so we'll see.
My bill, did you know that at the U.S. Capitol, every state in the United States gets two statues in Statuary Hall?
I did know that, but it's only because I was in D.C. a few months ago.
Okay, well, then you'll probably know the answer to my next pop quiz question, which is, what are the two statues that Utah has selected to represent the state?
I saw them both, and I took photos of them both because I am a nerdy tourist. We have Brigham Young, and we have Philo Farnsworth.
Right, so Brigham Young, obviously not going anywhere. Philo Farnsworth, some people don't know who he is. And if you don't know who he is, he's an early television pioneer. Technically, I guess he was born in Idaho, but did a lot of his work in Utah and sort of invented that tube that went inside early television sets. So Senator Todd Weiler, who's known for having some of the more fun and spunky bills, I guess, to put it generously, of each session, wants to change Philo Farnsworth at the Capitol. And he has proposed putting kind of a early polygamous feminist named Martha Hughes Cannon in his place.
Really, you know, for me, it's not about Philo. It's about Martha. I mean, we have this great icon. I mean, Utah was the first state to extend the right of vote to women in a statewide election. We were the first state to elect a female state senator. And Martha Hughes Cannon actually ran against her own husband and won.
So obviously a bit of a trailblazer. He says it's a good time, especially as we're talking about parity and female representation. There's not that many women who run for office in Utah to begin with. So to have the first female state senator in the United States be from a Utahn is noteworthy. She does have a statue outside of the state capitol right now.
So they wouldn't have to pay money to make a new one, basically.
Right, or they could fundraise. As he said, there will be no fiscal note tied to this bill, that he would privately fundraise for it, and that they would bring Philo home and maybe put him in like another museum in the state somewhere.
Can I just say that I love that Martha Hughes Cannon ran against her husband and beat him?
I know. Goals. First to have a husband and then to run against him too.
So
we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Nicole and Julia are on the Hill the entire 45 days, so you don't have to be. Want to ask your rep a question? Go to KUER.org and look under the News and Programs tab. Click on Ask a Lawmaker and tell us what you want to know.
Each week, we're going to introduce you to some of the movers and shakers in the Beehive State.
It's a new segment we're calling
Better Know a Lawmaker.
Since 2014, Robert Spinlove has represented District 49 in the Utah House. That includes Sandy and Cottonwood Heights. He serves on the Health, Transportation, and Public Education Appropriations Committee. And as an economist for Zions Bank, he knows a lot about fiscal policy. And that will come in handy when I ask him to look into his crystal ball to see tax policy changes. So welcome to Better Know a Lawmaker.
Thanks for having me.
What made you decide to get into state politics?
You know, I've always loved public policy. I've always loved public service. I graduated with a degree in economics and a minor in political science, and immediately went to work for the governor's office. So I worked my entire career in the governor's office, spent 15 years there, and loved it, loved what I was doing. I've worked for the last four governors. But then this opportunity just kind of came on me one day. My representative resigned for a new job, and so it kind of opened up this possibility. And the timing was right. Everything looked right. And so I jumped in, not intending to win, but then, you know, I kind of lucked out and ended up winning that special election. So I was appointed in January of 2014. And then about 2 weeks later, my first session started.
So as a representative of Sandy, that's more of a suburban area, and it's kind of going through this like growth spurt right now. There's so many high rises and there's all these office buildings going up. What are some of the most pressing issues that you're seeing in that part of our region?
Sandy is really interesting. And Salt Lake County is very unique this way, where we went through a big growth spurt about 30 years ago. And it was kind of the build out of the bedroom communities. And then most of my district now has been built out. But now what we're starting to see is a big resurgence in infill. So where there used to be a single family home, now you're seeing multifamily or apartments going in.
And there's some tension around that
as
well.
There's some tension around that. And so that's one of the struggles is trying. Overall, I view population growth, economic growth as a benefit. It's good for our economy. We'd rather be growing than contracting. However, trying to anticipate and plan for that growth can be very difficult and can create tension. When you've got a field that's been empty for the entire history of the community, and then they turn that into 300-unit apartment complex, that can create a lot of tension.
Because you work at Zions Bank, you know a lot about economics and tax policy, and the state is considering major tax reform this session. What do you foresee some of the big changes will be?
I think it's really important to kind of back up and understand why we're talking about this.
Right.
The tax policy can be very difficult to understand and can also be very contentious. So back when I was in the governor's office, I was the governor's chief economist. And we coined a term of the trees of taxation. So tax system should be transparent, revenue sufficient, efficient, equitable, and simple. So what we're saying is we want a tax system. The purpose of collecting taxes is to generate revenue to fund government operations. That's the reason we do it. Now, beyond that, do we want to use government to influence people's decisions? Do we want to take on systems that create greater volatility or are difficult to comply with? Those are all kind of debates that we have. And the tax system should reflect the underlying economy in an area. And so as we try to design our tax system, we want to be keeping all those things in mind. So 10 years ago, the state went about reforming its tax system. Before that, it was 1947.
It was under Governor John Huntsman.
Governor Huntsman, yeah. Mm-hmm. When he came in, he was elected in 2004, and he made his number one priority reforming the tax system. And so it took us 3 years. It was the 2005, 6, and 7 sessions that we made this the number one priority. Our focus really was on the income tax. And that's where we went from the graduated income tax to the flat rate with a top rate of 5%. Mm-hmm. And then we made smaller changes to the other taxes, to the sales tax. That's where we dropped the sales tax on food. We dropped the overall sales tax rate, made some other small adjustments, but the primary focus was on the income tax. So now it's been 10 years later. What we don't want to do is we don't want to wait another generation. We want to start looking at these things more often and trying to make those difficult decisions before things have developed so much that it becomes even harder. And so now we're looking at the sales tax and saying, what is the appropriate way to be implementing a sales tax? And when you look at the economy, our state's tax system is based on a brick and mortar goods-based economy. And what do we have today? We've got a service-based economy that is largely online and virtual. And so we don't have a tax system that is reflecting the way businesses operate. So we're looking at it and saying, how do we adjust our tax system to better reflect the changes in the economy? Now, we don't have specifics in mind yet. I mean, there
is a draft bill.
There's a draft bill. Mm-hmm. I would say that it really is kind of a discussion draft. And I don't want to get too much into the specifics before we, you know, have the plan in mind. But, you know, one of the things that is being discussed is streaming services. And that's one.
That's Netflix.
Netflix, Amazon.
Spotify.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. While that one is, it would be a very small sliver of the overall proposal, I think is a good example of this discussion. Where, think about it, 50 years ago, if you wanted to listen to a song, you wanted to own a song, what would you do? You'd go down to the record store. You would buy a record. When you bought that record, you would pay your sales tax on that good. And then you'd go home and play it. What do you do today if you want to own a song? You sign up for Apple Music, or you sign up for
a subscription
Amazon
based service,
or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then you're paying a monthly fee to access that. So we've gone from a good to a service. And so now we need to adjust the tax system to reflect that.
I know the Tax Foundation has been critical of the accumulation of fees that the Utah legislature has been passing. So, you know, there's a fee now for hotel rooms, things like that. Mm-hmm. Is that, in your opinion, a sort of subversion of trying to increase revenues through taxes by calling them fees? Do you see that as a distinction without a difference?
I think an efficient tax system is based on consumption. And so if you are consuming a good or a service, then you should be responsible for helping fund that good or service. And that's essentially what a user fee is. I think it actually is a better way of tying individuals to the services that they receive.
We could talk about tax policy all day, but I do want to move on to something you're passionate about. You've been this point person for paving the way for Utah's kind of driverless future for a while now. You created the first commission for autonomous vehicles in the state, correct?
Yes.
And what's the status of AVs? What do you plan to do this session to keep that momentum going on autonomous vehicle research?
What we want to be doing is we want to be trying to encourage the development of the technology, and we want to make sure that we as a state are not doing things that are going to impede its development. So that's why the last few years, what we've done is we said, let's look at what other states are doing. Let's look at what's working. Let's look at what's not working. And then let's develop a pathway moving forward that is going to position us for success. So I don't want to name names, but some states have responded to this by overregulating. And they've come down on the automakers and said, you have to do this and this and this. And what do? They pick up and leave. And then other states have really kind of thrown the doors open and welcomed them with open arms and said, we want to help you be successful. And I think that's the model that Utah wants to take. I think we have a really unique opportunity because most of the places where autonomous vehicles are being tested right now are perfect conditions. Austin and Phoenix and, you know, Silicon Valley. There's no hills, there's no snow, there's no windy roads up in the mountains. And so Utah provides a really unique and beneficial case for them to test. I mean, imagine trying to drive a self-driving car over Parley Summit or over Soldier Summit or over
Guardsman
Pass.
That terrifies me a little bit.
I know. And if we really want these cars to be truly autonomous, we can't just be testing them in perfect cases. We need to be testing them in the tough cases. And so that's where I think we have this opportunity. And plus, we've got Silicon Slopes. We've got some of the best tech minds in the world living in Utah, and so we can take advantage of that.
Representative Spinlove, thank you for your time.
Sure, happy to help.
That is all the time we have for this episode.
Yes, and thank you to Representative Spinlove for joining us. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our first episode from the Utah Legislature. So be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A quick plug for our 45 Days launch party coming up on Thursday, January 25th in Lehi at the Silicon Slopes headquarters.
Holla!
We'll be giving out KUER merch, holding a Q&A with an actual lawmaker.
And we'll have a sound booth set up for you to record your questions for lawmakers. So you can find out all the details by going to our website at KUER.org. 45 Days is a production of KUER News. This episode was produced by Tim Slover with editorial guidance by Doug Fabrizio.
Our music is by David Whited. For more local news and legislative coverage, visit our website at KUER.org and follow KUER on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also follow me at _Nixo.
And I'm at Julia Ritchie. We love hearing from you, so please drop us a line anytime.
See you in a couple weeks.